First case for argument, Schmood v. Tri-Cam Industries. Mr. McCrory.
Thank you, and may it please the court. This matter is here on appeal today from the District Court for the Eastern District of Wisconsin's denial of Tri-Cam Industries' post-trial motion seeking judgment as a matter of law or in the alternative for a new trial. At trial, the plaintiff, Mr. Kevin Schmoody, claimed that the Tri-Cam ladder he was using during his employment was defectively manufactured and that this defect caused the ladder to collapse and caused him to fall.
What is Tri-Cam's theory about why the ladder collapsed?
Tri-Cam's theory is that the ladder did not collapse, that the fall occurred because of Mr. Schmoody's own negligence. He did something to cause the ladder to become unstable.
But apparently it's undisputed that the rivet wasn't properly peened, and it also seems undisputed that the ladder fell. When you have a combination of those two events, you know, an improperly peened rivet and a falling ladder, do we have a res ipsa loquitur type of situation?
Such a situation was not pleaded in the court below. It was a negligence.
What is the evidence of his negligence? You said he was negligent. What is the evidence of that?
Our theory was that he... There was a report from the hospital in which he claimed that he was 6 to 8 feet above the floor on the ladder. Now, the ladder at issue is an 8-foot-tall ladder, so if he were 6 to 8 feet above the floor, he would either be on the top ladder or on the top cap itself, which you're not supposed to do.
What does that have to do with negligence? I don't understand.
Because he would have been in an area where the warning said not to stand. So standing that far, the ladder would have been less stable.
How tall is the ceiling?
The ceiling is 10 feet tall.
10 feet tall?
Yes, that is according to
testimony. How tall is he?
I believe he's a little over 6 feet, or 6'4".
Well, he couldn't be standing six foot high on the ladder, could he?
Well, that goes partly to the credibility issue and his conviction. He could have been, it's not necessarily that he was standing, he could have been hunched over and looking, because there was a drop panel, and he was looking above that in order to try and find a short for one of the wires for the MRI machine that he and his coworker were setting up. So that was based, our motion to include the comparative negligence affirmative defense was based on that testimony.
He's standing on the very top of the ladder, on the platform on the top of the ladder.
That's what he told the hospital personnel when he was taken to the emergency room.
Standing on the top, he said that.
I'm sorry, he said that to the hospital personnel. He testified at trial he was standing on the third or fourth step. So that creates the hospital report and his testimony trial create an issue of fact, which the jury could.
It creates an issue of fact. Why would that issue of fact have to be resolved in your favor?
Well, it wouldn't necessarily have to be.
Him, you know.
It wouldn't necessarily have to be resolved if the jury found in the first place that
there's a defective ladder. We know it's defective.
Correct. Yes, there is. The rivet was not properly peened.
So we have two theories. Either he fell off because the ladder was shaky or something like that because it was missing its rivet, or he was standing in the wrong place or something like that. So I don't understand. What is there to negate his theory? The judge didn't like your demonstration, didn't find that convincing.
Are you talking about our expert's demonstration? I don't know if he didn't like it. He just said it was a different version, and that brings me to the issue of whether
a different version of what?
It was the.
Don't you have the identical ladders?
Yes. Well, this one was an exemplar ladder because the plaintiff had the.
No,
the
I understand,
ladder.
But isn't it an identical product?
Yes, it's the same. Yes.
And then you could create the same defect with the rivet.
Good. Yes. What? What Tri-Cam's expert did was have a screwdriver inserted where the rivet would be.
Did he use the identical ladder, the identical model?
Yes.
And did he create that same, you know, defective rivet, the rivet that goes through the, doesn't go through the hole, creates its own hole? Did he duplicate the problem?
He was not able to create.
He was not able to do that?
He was testing what our expert was doing.
Why isn't TRICAM able to duplicate exactly the defect in the ladder?
Well, one of TRICAM's other witnesses, Roger Simpson, did try to do that. He did try to create that using the same machine in China. We don't know what the conditions were that caused the rivet to misbehave, so he wasn't able to do that. But what TRICAM did was to take the expert report of plaintiff's expert, Stan Johnson, which said that the rivet was not peened, the rivet fell out, and then the ladder collapsed. So Mr. Verhaelen tested that theory. He had, in place of a rivet, he had a screwdriver. Mr. Verhaelen climbed the ladder the way that Mr. Schmoody claimed he climbed the ladder.
How much does he weigh?
I believe he's about 215. I don't know his exact weight.
But Schmoody is considerably heavier.
Yes.
Well, that makes a difference.
If the rivet was loose.
Does he actually weigh 350 pounds?
That's what he testified, that he weighed.
Well, why didn't you find a 350-pounder? Or you could put weights in the pocket of your skinny 250-pounder.
Well, this was actually an issue of motion in limine by a plaintiff's counsel to not bring up anything about the rate weighting on the ladder. The ladder is rated a 200-pound ladder, but it means it can support up to 800 pounds. So there really is no difference between the 350
and the 215.
Yes, I know,
but that's when the ladder is not defective. When the ladder is defective, the weight of the person on it can make a big difference, obviously.
Potentially, but what Mr. Verhaelen found...
You have a very imperfect demonstration. He has an imperfect demonstration. I don't understand what benefit there would be from... Is that what you want, a retrial or judgment as a matter of law?
Yes, we ask for judgment as a matter of law or, in the alternative, a new trial. Now, we ask for judgment as a matter of law because plaintiff's expert, Stan Johnson, should not have been allowed to testify under Daubert and Rule 702. He did no testing to show that, given the mispeened rivet, that the rivet somehow failed, came out of the top cap prior to the fall, and that the right rear leg of the ladder came out of the top cap, which he claims.
What kind of testing do you think he should have undertaken?
He could have done some type of testing to determine whether or not opening up the ladder with a similar type rivet would cause the rivet to shear or to fracture, which is what he claimed in the testimony that he offered for the first time at trial. And then he could actually try to climb the ladder the way that Mr. Schmoody testified. He climbed the ladder
and break his neck. Why does it matter how the rivet failed, whether it simply fell out or broke? Doesn't it just matter that the rivet did fail? I mean, at bottom line.
Well, that's, with all due respect, that's begging the question. There's no evidence that the rivet failed prior to the fall. Yes, the rivet was found outside of the ladder afterwards, and the right rear leg was found out of the top cap. But that just as easily could have been a result of Mr. Schmoody falling on top of the ladder or the ladder compacting the ground.
He fell on top of the ladder and knocked the rivet out?
It's entirely possible. It could have been enough.
That doesn't sound right.
Well, there's no...
Why did the rivet pop out just because someone fell on it? Rivets aren't supposed to pop out like that.
Well, then that is...
The ladder falls down. Just, what, 6-foot ladder? If it falls down, its rivets don't start jumping out.
Did you submit or tender any test to substantiate that possibility?
I'm sorry?
Did you submit any test to substantiate that possibility?
No. No, we did not, because it is the plaintiff's burden of proof to show that this defect proximately caused the ladder to fail.
I don't know. If you have a defect of ladder and it falls down, I don't know how much more evidence he needs.
Well, he needs to show that the rivet, in fact, failed, because the rivet was still holding the leg to the ladder. It was not as clean as it would normally be, but it was peened, and it was holding it in there. Created a little extra circle, but it was. Yes. So there's no evidence that when Mr. Schmoody opened the ladder that the rivet in any way fractured or broke, and that while he was climbing that this ladder, that the right rear leg came out of the top cap. And so, without any testing, Mr. Johnson's opinion is just his ipsy dixit. And I will reserve the rest of my time for the rebuttal.
Just to ask you one question. You're not challenging the damages award, are you?
The only aspect for the damages is the statements from the DVR report and the effect.
What are you talking about?
The two statements that Mr. Schmoody.
Brief. You don't question the damages, do you?
Well, part of the new trial would be that the court's exclusion of two statements from the DVR report affected the amount of damages Mr. Schmoody received.
But I mean, you're not arguing that what it was $650,000 or whatever is excessive for his injuries.
No, did not make
what
that.
What actually came in evidence to show that the plaintiff was in fact unemployable or had diminished expectations of employment?
There were other statements that were made in the DVR report in which he said he didn't like being around other people and that he would go off and eat lunch by himself, and he was docked, penalized for not filling out paperwork and missing meetings because he didn't like to be around people.
Those came in?
Yes.
But he had a job.
I'm sorry?
He may not like people, but he does have a job.
Well, yes, exactly, and that's
right.
part of the issue is whether or not
he had another job if he weren't injured.
I'm sorry.
Why couldn't he get a similar job if he hadn't been injured? I mean,
well, part of our point is that he could get a similar job even because of this, because the credibility issue.
What's the relevance of the fact that he's not very sociable?
Well, everybody that he worked.
How does that bear on his damages, right?
Well, the other people he called to testify to that he had worked with previously did not testify to any antisocial tendencies. The first time we see this coming up is in the DVR report.
Here's a person who's not charming, right? He doesn't like people. Likes dogs, apparently. That's something. But he is able to hold this job. Why would his antisocial qualities be relevant to his employability? I mean, there are many jobs for which he would not be suitable, right? Salesman, so on. But for climbing ladders and so on, apparently he can do fine, right?
No, exactly, and that's part of the issue.
Why is his testimony relevant? What would be the impeachment value of showing that he's antisocial?
Well, it's not an impeachment. It's to show whether the extent to which he's actually actively trying to find work, whether he's making up these antisocial.
But obviously, the fact that you don't like people doesn't mean you don't want to work. I mean, he has to work, doesn't he? Otherwise, how does he live?
That's one of the issues. Is he fabricating these antisocial tendencies after the fact to avoid having to work?
Why would he be fabricating them? I don't know.
Doesn't want to work? I don't know.
Well, but how does that help him?
What?
That harms him.
Not necessarily, because it increases the damages for lost future wages, because he claims that he would...
Oh, screw it. You're saying this is his evidence?
His statements in the DVR report, the Wisconsin DVR report.
You want to have it in the case. You want to have it
exactly.
In the case. Yes, but now you just said the reason he's fabricating his antisocial tendency is so the jury will say, well, we've got to give you these damages so you can live because you can't work with people.
No, what we're saying is that these statements are relevant because he's saying to the DVR intake person, you know, I'm antisocial and here's how antisocial I am. You know, so that they can't find him a job, so that when he goes, he says, I'm looking for work. He has people testify as like he's diligently looking for work. This raises the question, is he diligently looking for work? So now he can argue that he's entitled to all these damages for lost future wages, but we can't question him on these antisocial tendencies, and why hasn't anybody else you've called testified to these?
You know, there are thousands of jobs for people who hate people.
Being a judge.
You know, there really are, you know, sort of solitary jobs, people who, you
Night
know,
watch.
Sit in toll booths, just all sorts of people who don't want to really be with people.
But he claimed he couldn't find any of those jobs, and that's why we thought these are relevant. So my time is up. If you have any other questions.
Okay, well, we'll give you a minute of rebuttal since we asked a lot of questions, Mr. McCrory. So, Mr. Weiss?
May it please the court. This was a remarkably simple products case as products cases go. This ladder was a brand new ladder. It was unwrapped on the day of the accident. It was the first occasion that the ladder was used. And there were almost 100 rivets in the ladder. And immediately after the accident, when the ladder was found, the one rivet that was defective was the only rivet that was damaged in the ladder. Our expert, Stan Johnson, who's an expert in fabricating products and has done many products with respect to rivets, examined the product, determined that the rivet was defective. Ultimately, that was not challenged by Tri-Cam because it had never been properly peened. He issued a short but very appropriate report that did codify what he ultimately testified to at trial. He said that this rivet was never properly peened, that it didn't go through the backing plate, that it didn't have holding power as a result of that, and that that was the obvious cause of the accident because the ladder would become unstable without the rivet.
You know, by your own description, this case was exceptionally simple. That's what you're saying, right?
Yes.
The rivet was defective, and as a result, the ladder fell. Why would the district court allow an expert at all? I mean, isn't this the sort of concept that is well within a jury's common knowledge? Everybody has a ladder.
I think that it would have been possible to try the case without an expert except for one reason, and that is that I know that when I started the case, I was naive with respect to exactly how rivets work and what the nature of this manufacturing defect was. And, of course, when we started the case, all that we knew was that the rivet had come out, and it took an expert to look at the rivet in order to determine that, in fact, it was defective. And, in fact,
you may not even have known the word peening.
No, I did not.
I
did not. And so, you know, an expert had to look at that in order to explain those concepts to the jury and to explain how it was that this rivet was mispeened, which left it vulnerable to coming out as it did on the day of the accident. So I think that it may have been possible, except for those technical things that I didn't understand that I thought the jury needed to understand, to try a case like this without an expert.
There are OSHA standards for ladders, aren't there?
There are, although I believe, if I recall correctly, I think that the OSHA standards did not end up coming up in trial because they were very general in nature.
They didn't specify how many rivets you need and all that stuff.
Right. I think it specified that they needed to be properly secured or some general language like that. And there may have even been testimony from Mr. Johnson about that. I don't recall, but they were not very specific with respect to the precise peening process. So essentially what ended up happening here is that we looked at it, we saw the defect in the rivet. The rivet was obviously out, found by the co-worker. It was a simple explanation for the accident because the ladder does become unstable when the rivet came out. Then the defense hired experts in the case, and the defense experts said a couple of things. The defense experts said, well, the ladder doesn't become unstable when the rivet comes out, which came as a surprise to us. They said they didn't, and they did this experiment where, holding carefully onto the ladder, the guy that weighed about 200 pounds would pull the screwdriver up, and then the top cap would drop down a little bit, but he could stay on the ladder when he anticipated that happening. And he testified on that basis that the ladder did not become unstable. And we said, no, we've always said that it does become unstable. We can demonstrate that to the jury. And then there was angst on the part of the defense, who said, well, no, you shouldn't be able to demonstrate that to the jury, that that's a test. And our contention all along was, and the judge agreed when he saw what we wanted to do, that our demonstration simply showed that when the top cap is disconnected, the rivet comes out, that obviously the ladder becomes unstable. And what the way Mr. Johnson demonstrated that is going up the ladder in a relatively ordinary way, just pulling the ladder to the right would cause the top cap to eventually dislodge from the rear rail.
And you said in Tri-Cam's experiment there was some slight movement of the ladder when he removed So he had a screwdriver in lieu of a rivet. Is that the idea?
Right.
So he pulls it out, and then what happened? There's some jerk of some sort, or what?
Yeah, what he did is he took the ladder. He had an assistant take a screwdriver that was attached to a string, and the screwdriver went through the hole that the rivet was designed to go through. So it was securing the ladder as the rivet would have secured the ladder. Then he had his assistant, while he was on the ladder, holding on to the ladder, pull the screwdriver out. The top cap of the ladder, if I recall his testimony correctly, dropped down somewhere in the vicinity of a half inch. But he was able to maintain himself on the ladder. So his testimony was that the ladder would not become unstable if the rivet came out. It would only drop down. Our point was, and the court noted that in its decision as well on motions after verdict, that this is really not a very fair demonstration of what would have happened with Mr. Schmoody, because Mr. Schmoody was on the ladder working at eye level or above, had both of his hands off of the ladder at the time, and even that kind of slight movement, dropping down a half inch, would certainly be sufficient to cause him to lose his balance. So it's a very
different... And he weighs like, what, 150 pounds more?
He is a big, big man. Mr. Schmoody weighed 350 pounds at the time of the accident.
How tall is he?
He was over 6 feet tall. I believe the testimony was that he was 6'2", if I recall correctly, Your Honor.
What is the nature of his injuries that led to the rather large award of damages?
Well, this fellow ended up with a back problem that is significant. He has difficulty standing, sitting. He has pain behavior virtually all the time that was noted by almost all of the witnesses who testified. He just has a devil of a time. If he has to drive more than an hour, he basically cannot tolerate it, certainly not in a day-in and day-out basis. So
his antisocial tendencies that the defendant emphasized, is he under any, or has he ever been under any kind of psychiatric care or taken, psychotropic drugs or something? Or is this just a personality?
It's a personality disorder. He had seen someone at the VA hospital, and I know that those records were available to the defense, and I do not recall whether they were mentioned at trial. But he had seen a psychiatrist at the VA, and the psychiatrist at the VA had diagnosed him as having an antisocial personality disorder, which he did never question. The issue with respect to the Volk report was always somewhat surprising to me, because this guy is not a people person. He has a big beard. He's 350 pounds. And he has a big beard.
So he's kind of scary looking.
He is very scary looking. And, in fact, we made no bones about that to the jury. Fortunately, even though he's kind of a big, scary looking guy, and he's antisocial and testified that he doesn't like people much, and the vocational people all said that...
That was admitted?
Yeah, he testified to that. We made no bones about that, because it was very clear that he was an antisocial fellow. And the vocational experts testified that because he didn't like people, it was important for him to be placed in a job where he wouldn't have to be dealing with people.
Where do you find your clients, Mr.
Well, Mr. Schmoody, I must admit, and I frankly told the jury this in closing argument, and I said that this is not an issue about whether or not you like Kevin Schmoody, because if it was, you'd probably decide that you didn't like him, and I have to confess I didn't much like him when I first met him. The truth of the matter is that he's a gentleman that grows on you over time, and one of the important things, I think, actually in the case is that his former employers came to testify for him, and they liked the guy. Huh. and testified that he was a very hard worker, that he was very diligent about his work. The two most recent employers had come to testify on that behalf. So,
well, would you testify against a 350?
Yeah, well, I guess that's a point
fair.
Well taken. But in any event, I was surprised to see the complaint about that, because the jury fully understood that this guy was not very likable, and frankly, he was not very likable on the stand. He's just not a fellow that's warm and fuzzy. He's big and he's scary looking, But ultimately, he's a hard-working guy who found himself in the best job that he could have possibly had and then ended up not being able to do that as a result of this injury.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Weiss.
Thank you.
So, Mr. McCoy, your time expired, but we'll give you a minute if you like.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Just two quick points on rebuttal. The first one is that Mr. Weiss said he came as a surprise to them when our expert claimed that the ladder would not become unstable if the rivet fell out. If that is indeed the case, then it comes to our point is why wasn't Mr. Johnson able to disclose his test prior to the date that he testified at trial? Clearly, they had the report before the close of discovery and before trial. Mr. Johnson could have done this demonstration, this quote-unquote demonstration, well in advance of trial and supplemented his report. He did not do that, so on the day of trial, TRICAM for the first time is seen a demonstration, which is actually a test, how Mr. Johnson believes that the ladder became unstable after he claims the rivet fell out, and we have no way to rebut this. Our expert has never seen this, can't say whether this is true or not. And additionally, Mr. Johnson's demonstration flies in the face of how Mr. Schmoody said he climbed the ladder. Mr. Schmoody said he climbed the ladder one step at a time. The ladder was firm on the floor, all four legs. There was no wiggle when he climbed the ladder at all, whereas Mr. Johnson required the ladder to be torqued and turned and lifted off the ground for the leg to come out. And just very briefly, my second point is with the damages issue. You asked Mr. Weiss about that. You had asked me earlier whether or not we were contesting the damages. I said no. Actually, that was an incorrect statement. That's where the conviction issue comes in, because the complaints of damages are subjective. Mr. Schmoody is the only one who complains about the back pain and testifies about the back pain. And so that's where the district court redacting the conviction to exclude the by-convicted federal language is very important, because it lessens the impeachment value and affects both the liability and the damages aspects of the verdict. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. McCrory and Mr. Weiss.